Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Think advertising on TikTok isn't for your business? Think again.
With TikTok ads, we went from 250,000 downloads to over 1 million downloads in less than a year.
I'm Eve.
I'm Anam, and we're the co-founders of Alinea.
Alinea Invest is an investing app for Gen Z.
We run 50 new ads per week with 3 variations thanks to TikTok Smart Plus campaigns. If you're not advertising on TikTok, you're missing out.
Drive more app downloads only on TikTok. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Welcome to Vegas World. It's time to party, and I'm your most excellent host, JC Vega. Thank you all for tuning in, and today is a very special episode, in a sense, because my co-host today is none other than my nephew.
Hi, guys. Jace.
This is Jace, everybody. It's so funny. We were gonna do, well, my initial thought was, how about we do Angels in the Outfield? But Jace had a better idea. He was like, let's go see Nosferatu.
Yeah.
So, as everyone, well, I guess if you're not aware, Nosferatu was originally a silent film in the silent film era. I can't remember the dates.
Yeah, it was like 22, I think. Something like that.
Yeah.
So, 100 years old, just about.
Yeah, and it was a German expressionist film. And that movie was, I mean, it still is. It's not so subtly Bram Stoker's Dracula. And they got caught, and copyright issues ensued, and they were like, as part of the settlement, they were like, every copy must be burned. Even though, like, we changed names and some details don't matter. But somehow, I guess
There was a film collector in France. And this guy, it's a really crazy story. I mean, he went through, like, Nazi occupation and, like, everything to keep this film safe. And, I mean, it's literally, I need to find his name because it's a really interesting story. But if it weren't for him, we would not have this film. It would be lost media. And so, I mean, shout out to him, you know?
It's crazy to think about, too. And it's one of the examples of, man, Kronoso? Like, it's a technical film. I can't remember the name of it. I was a bad host, right? It's a contrast between heavy light and then heavy dark, too. It's one of those, like,
yeah,
almost kind of like, I guess, maybe like noir in a sense, because Blade Runner kind of plays with that too. But like, it's Nosferatu is one of the biggest examples of that in German Expressionism. But this one, we're talking about the newly released 2024 edition by Robert Eggers, who...
Have you seen Robert Eggers' other movies?
No, I have not.
Oh, dude. I think he only has 3 films, I believe. I think he's probably, you know... Just for a 3-film catalog, I mean, there's only so many people that have, like, come out with the bangers that he has with only 3. I mean, Jordan Peele is the only other person that comes to mind.
Because he's, like, The Witch, The Lighthouse, and The Northman.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't seen The Northman. That's the one I haven't seen, but I've seen The Witch, and I've seen The Lighthouse. And The Lighthouse is, like, probably my top 15 ever. Like, that's really one of my favorite movies.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll have to watch it.
It's incredible.
See, it gives me pride and joy to know that Jace here is somewhat of a cinephile, because I'm a big movie guy. Well, I thought I was a big movie guy until he's mentioned a movie that I have not seen and was like, oh, I am out of my depth here. And he's just 18.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I'll try.
So, let's see. I guess we can't go see, well, I can't remember scene by scene, kind of, but overall, like, what do you think of the film?
I like how it stayed pretty true to the original. Now, I haven't seen the original in full, but I've probably seen it all just out of order, just through seeing clips and stuff. And they had some really nice odes to the original, like towards the end when they had that scene where he's going up into the house, you could see his shadow. I mean, that was like one of the most iconic shots from the original one. And I really like that they kind of played like Count Orlok's design. It's different from the original in a lot of ways, but I think there's just some clear odes to the original, and I like how they changed it up a little bit, but still kept it pretty true to the source material.
Yeah, definitely homage. And definitely, yeah, like the long fingers, because he had the long fingers. He kind of had like the weird round shape head going on, but I will say though, like when he was introduced, kind of took me out of the film just a tiny bit. The accent kind of like beginning when he was talking to Tyler, I think his name was, right?
It was
Thomas Tyler. I don't know where I got Tyler from.
Yeah.
Tyler doesn't even sound like a name from that era.
No, definitely not.
But that was played by...
It was Bill Skarsgård that did...
No.
Oh, Thomas you're talking about?
Yeah, Nicholas Holt.
Who sounds familiar.
Plays Beast, and he was in... That's the only guy I remember him as is Beast. He played in some other... He was in Fury Road. He was one of the war boys.
Okay.
So, yeah, Thomas. I will say that kind of took me out of it. But overall, I did like how... It was, colors were muted out. It was pretty gray and almost black and white in certain instances.
For sure. Whenever he was pulling up to the castle and just walking around like that, that pretty much was black and white. But I mean, if you've seen the lighthouse, I mean, you know how well Robert Eggers works with, you know, those colors and lack of color in certain instances. And I really liked the colors in this movie because it was really just, I mean, it was really... grays, a lot of grays, but then you'd get these candlelit scenes.
Yeah.
And it's weird because whenever you see, you know, candlelit scenes, it has this like warmth to it. It's almost comforting, but every single time there's a candlelit scene, it was some of the most unsettling moments in the entire film. And so I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. So you said Bill Skarsgård played Count Orlok.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Which I didn't realize until you just said that.
I thought it was very odd. Like, I could see it. I knew it going in also, but
yeah,
I feel like, I don't know.
No,
it looked a lot like, you know, even like the head and all. It just
may have to see the picture of it again because I didn't get that was Skarsgård.
You need to. It's
I will say, I guess this is one of his better movies of the year or previous year because, yeah, he was in The Crow, and I'm not gonna talk about The Crow yet. I haven't seen it yet, and I'm going to. And I'm gonna. You're cooked, Skarsgård. That's all I'm going to say. You're cooked.
Skarsgård had an on-off year, it sounds like.
Yeah. Lily Rose Depp was Ellen? Ellen Hunter, the wife?
Yeah. Yep.
And I didn't realize it was her, because I thought it kept... Lily Rose, at least in this picture, reminded me of Elle Fanning, or like... Dakota Fanning? One of those two. One of the Fannings. Yeah. She looks a lot like them.
I can't tell you if I've seen another Lily Rose film, but just from this alone, I was very impressed.
Yeah. She's a really good actress. I was
very impressed.
The opening, I don't know. I'm the opening to me, it was creepy.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Something felt lacking, but I guess, I don't know. It felt like it foreshadowed or played its hand a little too much.
Yeah.
Maybe. And I get that a lot of it, they stay true to the source material, mm-hmm. the story,
yeah,
a lot maybe. So I haven't seen the whole. Like I said, you haven't seen the whole thing. I haven't seen the whole thing. I've seen bits and pieces of it because I was in film school, and that's one of the things they show you for German Expressionism.
Yeah,
but you know, you clearly see at the beginning that she's talking to somebody, and like nobody's there, but you see like a beast of some sort, and like the whole movie they've been playing like she's a little cuckoo. Like, oh, she's just having,
you know, just fits. Nightmares and
just
nice bits.
Yeah.
All that.
It was pretty interesting too. Like she was talking to Orlok, it seemed like, when people were around, but like nothing's there except for the other person. And do they really acknowledge that a little? I don't think they acknowledge that too much, but she just started talking.
Willem Dafoe's character, whenever he came in, remember, he was looking in her eyes and he was saying like she's gone now, and he shoved an ice pick through her wrist.
Yeah.
So I think that was like kind of the only time they acknowledged like, okay, this is what's happening. I feel like it's pretty heavily implied, especially, you know, with how it ended and all that. I feel like they had to have known like what was up. Yeah. You know what I mean?
That was really neat, and you said they played with it, and like he showed up in the shadows a bit. That was, he looked more like, I guess, is the classic Nosferatu in those sense, when the at least in the shadows, when like you see the curtains.
I did hear that. I heard Robert Eggers. He was talking about how he wanted Count Orlok to kind of resemble, have certain features that were historically accurate for like counts and barons at that time. So like that's why Count Orlok had the big mustache. That's why he had, you know, like very receded hairline, but like that like little comb over, you know, looked very German of him. And so I know that's what I was kind of talking about earlier, where they kept the ideas from the original source material, but they still took some liberty with it to kind of make it, you know, original.
Make that too, and make it more modern, because, you know, silent film, so there was no dialogue or anything. That's wild. I watched a little, when I see clips of it, and like, just it's just action, you know? You get dialogue in like card credits, or like written out like that, but yeah, no interaction between them like that. Willem Dafoe is really good in it. We're not going to go scene by scene, everybody. We're just going to go generally overall. Did you feel like, did you feel it was scary? I mean, like, was there an adequate tension for you?
I think it made me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Is what it did. And I think that's what Robert Eggers is best at. I don't know that necessarily his films are the scariest, and there were scenes for sure where I was scared. I mean, some, you know, jump scares and all that, and or like whenever he was opening up the coffin, he like hopped out at him, and like, and that whole, I guess, the tension of like him like walking him down like in the hallway, and all that. And I'm trying to think.
The one eerie scene was when Thomas is in that tunnel, and like you see far away, and like the horse and carriage are coming to get him. I think the wolves were with him too, or the dogs.
Yeah,
that was pretty creepy. Yeah, like, I don't know, it wasn't necessarily scary in the sense of like jump scare. I mean, there was
a couple jump scares.
It
wasn't cheap like that,
but not like the cheap jump scares that like you're used to. But like, yeah, he like pops up in like the dream sequence. But like, yeah, not cheap. That's what I was kind of afraid, and not having watched Eggers' work before, I'm gonna be honest.
Yeah.
I was kind of anticipating, all right, we're going to get, like, a modern day, like, horror film. There's going to be a lot of jump scares and it was more atmosphere, and
Like I was saying, if you've seen his other films, The Lighthouse has probably some of the best atmosphere of any film I've ever seen.
Yeah, definitely tense, not like, not superficial scary, but, like, it was kind of scary because it's like, what's going to happen here?
Yeah, for sure.
But I think, yeah, the biggest thing for me, again, was, like, the way he played with the lighting and, like, the color grading of the film, like, how it was muted. Like, not bright colors, really. Even, like, before he went to the castle.
Yeah.
It was really muted colors.
But you know what I do like? The only time you get really bright and vibrant colors is whenever he dies. You notice that? Like, whenever the sunshine's peering in and, like, you have the flowers on the bed and with them and all that, that was like easily the most, I mean, compared to the rest of the film, I mean, it looked super super vibrant, you know what I mean? So I kind of like that choice. I like just overall the lighting and the colors and everything. I thought it was just really well done.
Aaron Taylor Johnson, who played Frederick Harding in this film, to me he felt out of place at certain points.
I was thinking that. I thought, especially compared to some of the other performances in this movie, I feel like, I don't know, I don't think he was just up
like
to that level.
The old English dialogue, I think, too, is what, like, because I'm used to seeing him as a modern day. I don't think he's played many historical figures or in historical dramas. So, like, I don't know, seeing him recite or hearing him recite, like, lines like that and, like, talking to everybody, he just felt so out of place. Like, he was, like, he just wandered into the wrong movie, and they were like, we gotta do the scene. He just showed up. Our guy's not here. So, get him in there. But,
yeah.
He's not, yeah, wasn't necessarily.
I wasn't crazy about him, for sure.
No, the doctor too, what was his name? Dr. William Sivers, who was played by Ralph Michael Ineson. He was Chris Finch in The Office, BBC.
Okay.
BBC version. The British version here. And he was in Final Fantasy as Cid.
What?
Yeah. And he was the main title character in The Green Knight, so he's been in some stuff, but like not a name.
What a filmography.
Yeah, he's a character actor for
Nosferatu and Final Fantasy.
Yeah, right. Diverse. Hey, man.
Very range.
Get it where you can, right? The money.
Sure, for sure.
Let's see. What else stood out to me? I don't know. You can definitely see that how Nosferatu is definitely inspired by Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Oh yeah,
especially on the boat, because I'm like, the only thing I can think of was like the Voyage of the Demeter.
Yeah, yeah,
that's the only thing I can think of, especially when he's picking off like shipmates or crew members.
Yeah,
I'm struggling with words. You think as a writer and a pretty good promo that I would be good with words here, but words escape me. I would joke about CT, but CT is not a joke.
Not a joke.
Is there anything else in particular that stands out to you in this film, you think?
I mean, it seemed like pretty standard Eggers for me, I guess. I think I'd put it like right above The Witch. I think it was very reminiscent of The Witch, I guess, because maybe, I don't know. I've spent more time with The Lighthouse for sure, but I think that was just such a different film compared to the rest of his filmography.
From clips I've seen from The Witch and The Lighthouse, I haven't seen the whole thing. I didn't watch it, but I've like seen bits and pieces, especially in other people's reviews. He seems like a very atmospheric director.
For sure.
It's more building the tension. I guess it would be almost like a Alfred Hitchcock in the sense of like, you know something's about to happen.
Yeah.
And like that's the you're building the tension. It's just, when are we going to get there?
Yeah, for sure. And with The Lighthouse even, I almost got like a David Lynch type of feel with how like absurd it was sometimes. You got to watch it. It's a very interesting film for sure.
I have to watch. This movie definitely keeps the German expressionist vibe to it. And
yeah.
German Expressionism, as I was looking up earlier, because it's been a while since I've been in film school. So, German Expressionism, high angles, deep shadows, chiaroscuro lighting. That's like light and dark.
Yeah.
Can play with that. Extreme camera tilting and impossible sets. So I feel like, yeah, it definitely keeps the German Expressionism vibe.
100%.
A lot of high angles, but a lot of wide shots too. Like in a world where like movies are heavily CGI and like fake sets, this one felt like a real world and lived
in. It did, for sure. Even some shots were almost even reminiscent of like Kubrick, where like that scene where he was riding the horse down and it like has this big landscape and he's riding in and it pans back to like him riding towards the, it was him going to the village, I believe, and it was just, they had, like, cows out to pasture. It was very reminiscent of Kubrick right there.
Yeah. Deep there. Like, that was really cool from a technical standpoint. And you said that Robert Eggers was in the movie?
I'm, like, 90% sure. In the village, the guy that, like, started laughing at Thomas whenever he showed up there, it looked exactly like Robert Eggers. I would be surprised to find out that it was not.
Yeah. That scene, I don't know, that scene itself felt odd to me, because, like, you know, all the kids start swarming Thomas, and then they just start laughing at him, and I guess maybe I'm a little illiterate in what's going on in that situation. What do you felt like they were trying to say with that?
Do you think him coming from the city, he looked... Maybe just the look of him was so absurd to them. Like, they, you know, they live out in the mountains.
Yeah.
Mountain people, kind of, you know. And he's, like, you know, he's dressed, like, in, like, fine suits and, you know, a nice hat and all of that. And he looks, you know, he looks like he's trying to come in big time, I guess.
Yeah. Not from around here, we can tell. You're a tourist here. And the fact that he's going to the castle and they're begging him not to go. Hey, don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Man, something else took me out of the film too. I think I made a joke about it. I think we were doing the chant or whatever, and like did he say Godzilla?
Yeah.
When they were, I forgot what part of that movie that was.
I think it was whenever Thomas they took him out of the river and he was in like a church or something. And they had all the nuns around him, and priests and all that, and they're like, you know, I guess.
Yeah, that's all the I can't speak German, so.
No.
They're probably saying something German, and I'm just being, city of the Americans. Is there a scene in particular that stands out as one of your favorites?
I like the scene of the guy that was in the ship where he was going. He's like, you know, I've had enough of this. And he took the axe and he was going to go destroy the box that was shipped over that had the, you know, demonic seal on it.
Yeah.
And you could, I mean, you could see Nosferatu in the background, like whenever the light would kind of like, because I think they had like a lamp that was kind of swinging. And so you could see like Nosferatu's shoulder sometimes. And then.
Oh, see, I didn't catch that. He was in the background there?
He was in the background a few times, yeah. Uh-huh. And you could like kind of see his silhouette too. I thought it was really, and again, with that warm orange lighting from the lamp, I mean, I thought it was a really good scene. Yeah. And then the end scene, like I said, where, you know, I've talked about it already, but where he's creeping up the stairs and it pays homage to the original Nosferatu.
Yeah.
I just really like that because of all.
That ending was pretty beautiful, I will say.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, self-sacrifice. We'll spoil it. I mean, if you're listening to this, people, you're,
yeah.
You should
yeah.
expect this by now. Especially for me, guys. I do what I want. It's Vegas World. That was a beautiful scene, and like I did watch the ending of the original Nosferatu, and it's so funny because I mean it's you know the silent film era.
Yeah.
And like he's sitting there drinking her blood, and then he sees sunlight, and it's like he just disappears, and it's like, oh, the master's dead. And it's just kind of it's you know, it's funny. Looking at it now, but back then it's like, oh, that's nice. But yeah, this one was pretty poignant, especially because, you know, Thomas realizes after they go to his, they go find.
Yeah, they're going, Willem Dafoe and the doctor, they're convincing him like, hey, we got, you know, we're going to go drive a stake through his heart and like, you know, do all this. And they get in there and it's, who was that? It's like his boss, I think. Actually.
Yeah, the boss
and
he became
like a acolyte of Count Orlok, and he was in there, and they, you know, they drive the stake through him, and they burn his his casket because they say, you know, like he has to go somewhere to rest or he's gonna, you know, die. Yeah. So they destroy that. They have, you know, Lily Rose back in the house where Count Orlok's gonna come and find her, And yeah, so they had that, you know, big reveal where Thomas finds out, oh shit, you know, he isn't here. He's with my wife right now.
Yeah. That was a poignant scene. Another weird, I wasn't expecting dude to bite off the bird's head.
Oh, yeah.
I figured he would, but I didn't think they were going to actually, like, show him, like, biting into it.
Oh, dude.
That was wild. I was like, whoa, hey, this is a, I know the dude's, you know, art house and all that, and like, but I was like, man, this is a major release, and they're showing it.
I think this is like the for sure like the biggest budget he's ever had to like work with, I think.
Yeah, because I mean, The Witch is an A24 film, so that was an independent,
yeah,
produced.
So was The Lighthouse.
So yeah, this is his first. I think this is his first major studio film too. So
only his fourth film too. So I mean, pretty early in his career, and I'm very excited to see what else.
What else he'll do?
I think he's probably one of the best working directors right now, just because, I mean, he's just getting his catalog started, and I mean, I feel like he's 3 for 3 for the movies I've seen for sure.
Did he write the other two as well? Do you know?
I believe so.
Okay, I'm looking at it now. Yeah, he's written and directed all of his films. And I guess you could call it, he wrote and directed this, but I guess he got to create the dialogue because the dialogue's original to this film, because, yeah. You know, silent film.
Well, I want to say that...
There was a 70s movie, I think, too, but I'm sure he didn't lift.
There was, but, I mean, nobody saw that.
No, but I don't even know it existed until I looked it up earlier, trying to thinly research this.
Yeah, yeah. I was seeing clips of it earlier, and it did not look good at all. I'm very happy that, that Nosferatu being the influential film that it was, and having the history of it, you know, having to be protected and all of that. I'm glad that a film like that got to be remade, and I'm glad that they got a director like Eggers that, you know, could carry out that vision in a way I feel like was appropriate. And, you know,
this was a cheaply made movie too.
Was there, how, what was the budget?
$50 million.
Okay.
And according to Wikipedia, because I'm looking at Wikipedia right now, the box office is $56.2 million.
But, I mean, I feel like it's only been out for like a week.
Yeah, it was released December 2nd in Berlin, December 25th here in the U.S.
Yeah, I knew it was either a Christmas release or a Christmas Eve release. I knew
yeah, around that. What Christmas movie, right? Nothing says Christmas like Nosferatu.
For sure.
God, there was a scene that stuck out to me as, I don't know, I felt like Lily's acting was kind of funny when she's sitting in the bed, just like, he's coming, he's coming soon. I'm like, all right, some of that felt to me, it was a little, I didn't mean to laugh, but like some of that was funny to me.
Yeah.
I felt I was not a serious moviegoer in that moment, because I'm like laughing and all that, and the theater's quiet, I'm trying to snicker, and it's just... Yeah, you know, just not happening. I'm trying to think of another thing that sticks out to me. I think that we pretty much covered it all. It's tough to review off of one viewing, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Scene by scene, really.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking going, like, as we were leaving the theater, I was like, low-key, I need another watch or two just to, like, be able to, like, form some real opinions about some things. But overall, I mean... I thought it was a really good movie.
Yeah, it just says $50 million. It just says $50 million for box office for this movie.
Okay.
So technically, it made it back its budget.
Yeah.
Made by six. By only, like, only, it's 50, yeah, 56. That's $50 million. So, you know.
Yeah.
It's still probably going to make more, probably in once the streaming deal. Well, of course, I don't know. Streaming's kind of messed up the home video release in that sense, because everything goes to streaming. Yeah. No, man. Death. I think if you had to give it a rating, what would you give it?
I think probably somewhere like 7 or 8 out of 10.
7 or 8 out of 10? I'll give it a solid 8.5. I feel that's worth that.
I'm gonna do my Letterbox later. I think I'm going to give it like a 4 or 4.5 on Letterbox. So
yeah,
that equates to about 8 or 9, I think. So.
Definitely a good movie. Like I said, it wasn't like I was kind of anticipating the big Hollywood blockbuster horror style of this, but he kept it pretty. They kept it pretty grounded, pretty tame, I guess. I mean, there was horror elements, like I said, like we said before.
Yeah.
There were jump scares, but not like as
crazy, like
ridiculous as a horror film would be. But yeah, like I said, the dread and all that comes from just the atmosphere created.
And
just the reaction shots of I forgot his first name. I was gonna call him Beast, but it's not his name. He's not Zane Holt too, because Zane Holt is a completely different movie. TV show. Nicholas Holt, yeah. Just based on his reactions and stuff, and like I did like again how you didn't really see a full glimpse of Nosferatu until like towards the end of the film.
Yeah.
Covered in deep shadow. Like I saw, you could kind of see the mustache. I think that's another reason too why I was like, that's not Bill Skarsgård.
Yeah, probably.
For me, at least, but, like...
Yeah, no, I like that. I mean, most of the movie, I mean, he was just this big, towering silhouette. I gotta find out how tall that man is in the movie. I mean, he looked giant. He looked like Shaq.
He might have had a body double for that. They might have, or, you know, they played with a camera. I mean, they probably had a low angle to make him look super tall, or... Maybe some of that was CGI. I don't know.
I think a lot of it probably was CGI, because I think, I don't know, that would have been a lot of prosthetics for, they might have done his head for real, but I think his body, I mean, because you could see like maggots crawling in and out of his body. His body was very, it was very disgusting, but whenever you think about it, I mean, that's another thing I heard Eggers say was that he wanted to play more to what a vampire actually, you know, meant to people back in the day, and not like the
Hollywood.
The Hollywood drawn out, you know, version of vampires. He wanted to play to the actual like folklore of vampires.
Yeah.
And so he looks like he's 200 years old. I mean, he's absolutely just decrepit. Like,
yeah. And definitely his voice was pretty worn, weary too, and like how he would talk. He strained a lot when he would try to talk or breathe in general.
Yeah.
Which, again, added to all the creepiness. My thing, too, thinking about it now, I like how Nicholas Holt doesn't, or Thomas doesn't really seem to react. I mean, he's nervous, but, like, he don't look him in the eye. And yep. He seems pretty just nonchalant to think about it. Meeting this guy. I'm going to go to this man's castle all the way in a different village. And in the dead of night. No questions.
The carriage pulls up to him. He's like, all right. And just
yeah, gets
just
in the carriage. Him. And he's like, oh, yeah. And like, he gets sassed at, like, call me Lord. I'm a dignitary, damn it. So you're going to refer to me as such. Yes, my Lord. And it's just like, oh, my. That's another thing, too. All right. So a horse and carriage came up to get him.
Mm.
But we didn't see any staff. We didn't see anybody, like, servants.
No.
At the castle.
There was no driver. Did you notice?
No, I didn't see. No. I didn't notice that. There was just
no driver on the carriage.
See, all right, so in that case, then, yeah. Nicholas, I keep wanting to call him Zane Holt. I don't think they're even related. Probably don't even spell the same, but yeah, Thomas just gets on. No questions asked. Doesn't even, like, hey, there's no horse. Yeah, there's nobody riding. They're driving this carriage. There's nobody there. There's no furniture except for, like, the dining room.
But I guess you could also say that that could just be Orlok's, like, pull on people, you know what I mean?
Yeah, true. It could be the vampire lore, I guess what they call glamming them, like,
yeah,
just that personality to get them. And, like, yeah, I mean, he's tethered to Ellen, too, which was neat. And then, like, the wife of Aaron Taylor Johnson, I can't remember her name. Doesn't matter, though.
Either.
But his wife gets pulled into it, and then, well, no, she, I mean, yeah, I mean, he comes well, to her
was,
in the dark.
She was probably the most skeptical of, God, what's Lily Rose Depp's character? I keep blanking on her name, and I keep saying Lily Rose.
Ellen Hunter. There we go. I got it right there.
So, Aaron Taylor Johnson's wife in the movie, she was probably the most skeptical of Ellen. And she was like, you're dragging this on too long and, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, and then she got murked later that night. So.
Anna Harding is the character name, and she's played by Emma Corrin. You know her as, I forgot her name in the movie, but she's Xavier's sister in Deadpool and Wolverine.
Oh, okay.
She's that actress.
Okay.
Cassandra Nova, there we go. Not that it's part of this review, but she's also based on Lucy Westrena from Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah.
Let's look at that real quick, the counterparts.
Yeah, do you think Willem Dafoe is Van Helsing?
Do I think he's Van Helsing?
Who would he be
if not Van Helsing? That's true. That's true. And as you say that, you are correct. He is based off of Van Helsing.
Well, because if you've read Dracula, Van Helsing is actually, he's old. Yeah. And, like, you know, contrary to how he's normally portrayed, but, yeah, I mean, Van Helsing was described as, you know, being a little past his prime.
His Professor Albin Eberhardt, and his name alludes to Albin Garu, who was the producer for Nosferatu, the original, yeah, wow. 1922, as you said earlier.
Yeah
Dr. Sivers is based on, well, let's specify the character, Hernock, the owner of the Knock brokerage. That's the crazy dude who bit off the, you know, head of the bird. Yep. He's based off of Renfield.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
For Bram Stoker's Dracula. Yeah, again, so deep, I mean, yeah, I can see why they got sued and the producers lost to Bram Stoker's estate, because
you
ain't fooling anybody. You may change the names a little bit. You might fudge some details, but, sir,
it's very clear.
See what you're doing here.
For sure.
So, being a youngster, you are.
Yep.
Did the movie lack, though, with that fact that it wasn't as, like, jump scares and, like, kind of the
I don't like
standard
that.
Horror. Yeah?
I don't like... Personally, actually, I don't even like horror movies that much, and I can't... Well, I won't go see Terrifier 3 in theaters, but before
now,
that...
Hang on. Let's stop right there for a second. You don't like horror films.
I got...
But you've seen Terrifier.
I got dragged to it. If it was up to me, I would have never seen it. Matter of fact, this is how I found out Robert Eggers is making Nosferatu, because I saw I was watching the trailers before the movie, and honestly, that's probably the best thing I saw that whole night.
That's what were some of the other movies they previewed?
The movie trailer that I was telling you, like I heard this was
The movie with Jack Quaid himself.
Yeah, Jack Quaid.
Companion. There we go. That's the movie. Companion.
Yeah, so that was there. I think every trailer that we saw today in Nosferatu is
those are the ones you saw.
Yeah, except for Nosferatu, of course.
Yeah. But,
yeah. That's where I found out about things.
Yeah, if I had to give it a rating, I said 8.5 out of 10. Again, I just love the cinematography. Loved all the wide angle. I think that's what made it creepier for me. It's just like this big lance, this big, vast nothingness.
Yeah.
Even the castle, like we were far away. We're seeing him just go through. There's nothing except like dirt, grime, and like dogs and rats occasionally. But the rats weren't, I don't think the rats were too much in the castle, but they were everywhere else. But they live on the streets though. But
going back to what you're saying about atmosphere, I think the biggest play in the atmosphere was the sound design of the film, because if you notice, there's almost no silent moments. There's always some kind of like atmosphere, whether it's like wind blowing or something, but like it just, I think that does more than what you would realize. And I think that brings me back to The Lighthouse, especially because, I mean, The Lighthouse the entire time, I think I want to find out how, like, what the increments are in between foghorns, but you had a foghorn going that entire movie and waves crashing. And
since I've never seen Lighthouse, give me a brief, not a summary, I guess, but try to tell me what the plot's about. Like, just...
Robert Pattinson, he's keeping this lighthouse with Willem Dafoe. Willem Dafoe had already been there for some months on this, you know, little island. And this is Robert Pattinson's first time doing it. And something happens to where the boat can't come pick them up because their shift is done. But they, you know, they're stuck on it for significantly longer. And they go mad, essentially.
Okay, so it's a movie about insanity. There's no, like, looming threat,
No.
Demon or anything like that. Like,
no,
Okay, I'll have to see it. Okay.
Not really demon, but, I mean, it's something you see. And, one thing that I didn't pick up on until the very last scene of it is that it's actually a modern telling of the Greek mythology story of Prometheus, which I thought was really interesting. But I didn't even catch that until the very last scene of it, because it was a very obvious tell that it was Prometheus.
Didn't he mention that too in this film too? I think Prometheus. Didn't he mention Prometheus?
Oh, they might have.
Maybe I'm thinking of something else. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm misremembering watching. I watch too much media, people. Again, I like that it wasn't like just a standard Hollywood, you know, jump scare. Or like it's more, they let the atmosphere and just the looming dread of Nosferatu showing up instead of like,
here he is, he's coming after you, he's doing it. Like, it was more like, I don't know. It was the idea that he's gonna come at you, not actually showing him coming after you, you know?
And the crazy thing is, like, I'm not gonna hurt her, it's gotta be her will to come join me.
Yeah.
That's another thing too. And like, cause like, yeah, like his minion, whose name, I can't remember again. I can't remember those names, I guess. Cause they didn't say them a whole lot either.
No, they really didn't.
Hernock. I feel like that'd be easier for me to remember Hernock, but I never heard him say that. Plus I'd probably
laugh. I'm not even sure that they said his name in the movie.
Yeah. I know it's Knock Brokerage. I remember that. Like, I saw that, like the name of it, but yeah. And then he was like, you want me to go grab her? You want me to do something to her? And he's like, no harming her. She's got to come of her free will.
Yeah.
What was interesting for me was how everyone treated Ellen in the most of the movie. How it's like, oh, she's like a little, to the child, you know, they called her child. She's clearly a
woman. Grown adult.
Yeah. Or I guess maybe she, like, if we're going by olden times, saying maybe she technically was a child. I don't know. We're not going to get that far into that debate. However, but, you know, they treat her like she has no agency. Like, oh, we're gonna take care of her. She's going to do what we say. Like, you know, then, like... You know, she kind of gains agency, like, and not even just from people, but from Orlok himself.
Yep.
Gain agency by like, you know, I'll take you as my husband. Yeah, I'm yours, but I'm really just stalling in order to kill you.
Yeah, but that's also an interesting thought that Orlok in the end was really the only person that gave her that freedom of choice, you know what I mean? I feel like that's kind of an interesting thing.
That is pretty interesting about the story too. Yeah, like you said. Only he gave her a choice. Like the husband, the husband's like, I'm here to support you, and she's like, you don't really care about me. You only wanted the job and the status. And he's like, no, I'm here for you. I mean, clearly showed she cared, but that's the scene that made me bust out hysterically when she was like, you know, take me, prove that you're, you know, better than him. And I'm just like, what are we doing here?
Yeah,
that was that made me laugh. I think that was, I guess that shows my immaturity and not a sophisticated adult and cinema goer. I like twirl my mustache.
I don't know. I think they only put that scene for shock value, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, I don't.
I'm pretty sure that wasn't in the silent film, but
definitely
that was some. Definitely some liberal, creative license there.
For sure.
And you know, to show the male ego in a sense of like, she's mine.
Yeah.
My wife. Yeah. Was that awkward though? Seeing a movie with some nudité with your uncle sitting right beside you.
I'm gonna be 100% honest. I started thinking about it walking up to the theater. I was like, we're going to see a Robert Eggers movie. And I knew loosely what Nosferatu was about. I had an idea that it was going to get a little scandalous.
Yeah.
And
sitting there with your uncle there, it's just like...
Yeah, I started thinking about it like as we were walking in. I was like, shit, maybe I didn't think this through.
Maybe I should have stuck with Angels in the Outfield. Yeah, again, I'll reiterate that. We were going to watch that because I thought it'd been funny to have like me as... I'm not going to say old because I'm not old. Older than him, obviously. That it'd be funny to see a movie from my generation to have him see it and talk to him about it in adult lens. But yeah, let's skip that and just watch Nosferatu.
With, I know. What a 180 right
What now. A 180. And then, oh yeah, there. By the way, there might be some adult, some very spice. Adult, some spice. Let's just call it that. Spice into that. That was funny to me. I just remember thinking, like, during that scene, I kind of looked over at you and I was just like,
I knew where it was.
I'm here. Sure. I'm here with my nephew, and we're seeing that. All right, hey, it's okay. I guess it is what it is. We're both adults here.
Yep.
But yeah, switching gears from that a little bit because I think we ran out of things to say.
Yeah.
And this was a topic. This was something I brought up last week. Superman trailer. Did you watch it?
It's been a minute. I don't recall everything from it.
Yeah, but I mean, do you remember your initial reactions or what you think?
I like it. I like it for sure. And I like that color grading on it. I like that it's not like bland like every other superhero movie I've seen for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's definitely not muted and gray like it's Snyder
very,
film.
It's very vibrant and I like that. I want Superman to be like, you know, symbol of hope. I want Superman to almost be a feel-good story, you know what I mean? I don't need, I didn't like Schneider's, Man of Steel. I thought it was probably his best movie that he made superhero-wise.
Yeah, I'll give it that.
Because I don't know what else would be. I'm not going to say Justice League was. I'm not going to say, I mean, I don't even know.
Yeah, definitely that. Because I was curious to see, because like, when I was talking about it last week, I was like, I liked Man of Steel when I first saw it. I liked the idea of Superman that was kind of not yet... Here's my thought what was going to happen with that. I thought we were going to get that first movie where he's like, I know I grew up here and all that, but like I'm still not quite sure about where my place is in the world. I'm an alien, but these are my parents. I grew up here. I'm a human, in a sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was just too emo. After the fact, and then like when Batman v Superman came out, and it's just more I'm a lonely boy.
I don't even want to talk about Batman v Superman.
But so do you think just from that alone that it'll be better automatically than Man of Steel?
I don't know because I feel like you could definitely still, but I do like. I have a lot more hope for James Gunn than I ever did for Zack Snyder.
There is a review I saw of a screen test of the movie that they say it's Guardians of the Galaxy level good.
Okay.
And of quality.
But I hope it...
And saying that, yeah, you worried that it might be too jokey, like Superman's gonna crack a joke.
Yeah, yes, yes. And I did hear James Gunn say that he did not want to go that route at all. He wanted to, you know, make it more mature, I guess. But
serious, I guess.
Yeah, serious, not mature. But I also like that we're not getting Superman origin story. I mean, we all know.
Yeah.
We all know Superman. We don't need that. You know what I mean? And I saw, you know, they're putting Green Lantern in there. I think I like that. I like that we're getting a good Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
True, like, to the source material Lex Luthor, I hope so.
The inspiration for Jesse Eisenberg's Lex Luthor makes sense. We're not going to mention names.
Okay, oh, my bad.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
We're not going to go there. We're not, because that goes down a rabbit hole, but
yeah,
I know that you know.
I know what you're getting at.
Yeah, that's kind of the basis of it, and that makes sense, but yeah, that's not good Lex Luthor. And the fact that he was a junior, not really Lex Luthor, but like, I think that's the real reason why they tried to get away with that for him acting the way he did. It's like, oh, it's not really Lex Luthor. It's Lex Luthor Jr., but it's Lex Luthor. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We're doing something different. But yeah, I feel like this is going to be definitely more Superman than that. So another thing that came up last week, I didn't have a co-host, so I just wanted to bounce this off to you. Idea. The Batman 2 has been pushed back a year.
I think they can take as much time as they need.
Yeah. There's apparently some sort of issue going on in Matt Reeves' personal life, allegedly. I don't want to speculate too far on that. But there's also a running theory that they're going to backdoor put the Batman, this Batman, in the DC cinematic universe.
See, I heard them specifically say that the Batman universe and the James Gunn DC universe was going to be two entirely
separate things.
And I don't know.
On the concept alone of that, of, hey, he's going to be in the DC universe in that sense, would you hate that?
I don't know if I could see this Batman with the Justice League, in all honesty.
I would rather not. Like, yeah, I know he's...
I don't see Pattinson, like, being that dedicated to... I think the Batman's cool for him, but I think...
Yeah, you don't see him.
I don't see Pattinson committing to, like, a full universe where he would have to do some, like some RDJ stuff, where RDJ was in, like, however many Marvel movies. I don't see Pattinson.
And then, like, brief appearances in somebody else's movie, and then Justice League movies.
I think you would need that for Batman, because it's Batman. You kind of...
Especially with the Penguin series, I think it's too late for that.
Yeah, for sure. I think they're fleshing out their own universe. I think they're going to do their own things with it. I think it's going to be a little more gritty.
Yeah,
I hope at least.
Do you think Henry Cavill should have got another shot at Superman, or do you think it's good that they're doing a clean slate, a new Superman?
That's tough, and because I think Henry Cavill was probably one of the best parts of the original DCEU.
Yeah,
I think it was.
If he would have had a better director and a better writer,
I think he.
I'm being blunt.
I think he straight up was the best person to play Superman.
I still laugh at the quote that James Gunn gave about the whole situation, because, you know, Henry Cavill showed up at the end of Black Adam, and he's like, we need to have a talk, and everyone's like, oh my god, he's back as Superman, and then, like, James Gunn gets announced as the new head of the DC studios, and James Gunn's quote was, no, I didn't fire Henry Cavill, he just wasn't hired. That was just funny to me. It's like, what a almost, like, I mean, it's matter of fact, I guess, in a sense, but what a, like, such a backhanded, like, diss sort of thing. He's like, nah, he wasn't fired. He just wasn't hired, guys. It's just like, man.
That's kind of crazy. So
it would have been interesting to see how he would have done with a more optimistic and more Superman being Superman.
Yeah, and I wish he did get that opportunity, but you know what? I'm going to look towards the future. Who's the guy that's Superman in the new one?
I don't even know his name.
I'm saying I don't know the guy's name, but he has the look, at least, I think, and I think, you know, that goes a long way. I don't know. I hope we just get a very, like,
David Corenset?
What a name, man.
Yeah, I can't even pronounce it. Corenset. What has he been in? Oh, okay. Let me look at his IMDb real quick. David Corenset. We're just going to go with that. If it's not right, I'll correct myself later. There we go. And if you ever listen to this podcast, if you just somehow come across it, David, I'm sorry. But get a simpler name. You should have got a stage name. You should have been David.
You know, David David.
David David. We're going to call you David Davids. There we go. I'm going to call you David Davids. It is what it is. No. David Corenswet was in Twisters as Scott. Okay. Generic. He was the projectionist in Pearl.
Okay.
But yeah, I did like the look. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the broccoli hair. I don't know why that's such a big thing in this day and age. The broccoli hair. But I think it worked for his geeky, you know, for the modern day take and the geeky Superman, geeky Clark Kent.
Yep.
And then, like, it's slicked back when he's Superman. They use the John Williams score for Superman, and David's clearly playing a throwback to Christopher Reeve's Superman.
Yep.
As far as that, how he acts geeky, like, he does the different, you know, personalities, how he's super strong and confident. I'm super confident when he's Superman and geeky, when he's Clark Kent.
Yep.
Which, again, I feel like goes back to that Quentin Tarantino rant where how, like, that's Superman's critique on the human race.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Neither here nor there for that.
I really hope this movie's like a, like, if you've ever seen the animated All-Star Superman, it's like something like that, like, where it's just like, I don't know, just like classic Superman, because I feel like, I mean, we haven't got that since
Christopher Reeves.
Yeah, 70s.
That's crazy to think about, man. Like, yeah, because, like, even, like, you know, I mean, Henry Cavill's Superman wasn't really Superman.
We almost got, Nick Cage. We almost got
Nick Cage is Superman Returns, or Superman Lives.
Yeah.
That's so weird to think about. I mean, we did kind of get, we got a glimpse of that. Oh, so, all right. You've seen The Flash, right?
I haven't, but I've seen.
You've seen that?
Yeah, I know.
It's weird to me that they actually had him on set, Nick Cage, playing that part, but, like, in the movie, he looks CGI'd. It's so weird, but he was on set playing that,
yeah.
In this costume, all of that. Man, that'd have been so weird. I can't think of a world, I can't even imagine what a Tim Burton Superman would have looked like. But you know what it'd been funny? Superman wouldn't have been even the main character in his own movie. Oh, wait, he's weird and an alien, so he probably would have been. Unlike Batman. Because you ever think about that? Michael Keaton's Batman, or Michael Keaton in general, doesn't really appear much in his own movies as Batman. Yeah,
it's very villain-focused.
It's so funny. Yeah, they spent more time as being Penguin, and he wasn't actually a Penguin in the comics, but, like, you know, in the movie, Tim Burton. That would be funny if he actually would have did the Burgess Meredith.
Imagine.
I mean, I guess he kind of
did
a grunt or something like that. Isn't it weird, though, to think about in the 60s television show, Batman, Burgess Meredith? Mick from the Rocky series is playing the Penguin.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that funny? I never noticed that.
You never noticed that? No? You didn't think about that? Yeah, that's him. Oh, that's old Mick playing the Penguin.
That's crazy.
Oh, get him, Rock! That'd have been so funny.
Someone's got that cut somewhere.
Probably. God, you know, you ever seen that video of, like, they took the Batman trailer and edited Adam West's Batman?
Yeah, that was great.
One final thing, we'll wrap it up. This is about Nosferatu. This is supposed to be a Nosferatu review. We did that, but I also like to pick his brain a little bit more about some other stuff. Two more thoughts, and we'll close out. Are you a Sonic fan at all, growing up?
Like Sonic the Hedgehog?
Yeah.
Yeah, I played the games. Yeah.
Have you watched the movies?
I've not.
Okay. I was just going to ask your opinion on those. What do you think about this third one coming out?
I mean, they look kind of cool.
But yeah, I guess you're out of that age range, too.
Yeah, what's in it? James Marsden?
He's
in them. I mean, it looks cool for, like, if I was that age, Jim Carrey is Dr. Eggman.
Yeah.
It seems really cool if I was, like, 10 years younger.
See, I wasn't a Sonic fan. I mean, I played the game on Sega, the original one, a little bit.
Yeah.
But, like, I never played any other. My only frame of reference for Sonic was that game and maybe, like, the Sonic the Hedgehog television show where him and Knuckles were, or not Knuckles, Tails were obsessed with chili dogs. You ever seen those?
Uh-uh.
Oh, man, it's so funny. It's looking back now, it's hysterical because, like, it's so bad. But, like, as a kid, it's like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
Oh, all right, one more thought. Captain America, Brave New World. Are you looking forward to that? What's your take on the Marvel universe?
I'm going to be 100% honest. I have not even been slightly interested in a Marvel movie since I went go see Doctor Strange, and I think I got, like, just so disappointed off of that. I don't know if I've seen a Marvel movie since.
I was kind of disappointed. I mean, it was kind of Sam Raimi-ish. Because, yeah. like, if you've seen the yeah. Evil Dead stuff, you know. But, like, we didn't have that classic yeah. Sam Raimi horror comedy elements. I mean, there was some there was of it in there. But, like, yeah.
I didn't like it, though. Like, it, yeah, just the whole thing.
Do you feel like Deadpool and Wolverine was a Marvel movie?
I don't think it counts.
You don't think it counts?
No.
You think?
Not a Marvel, like, in this, like, Marvel Studios
you feel,
movie.
But you felt like it, Ryan Reynolds had more of a creative license over that movie than probably would have been a Marvel movie.
For sure.
My biggest pet peeve about that, you know how, like, in the first two movies, they had joke credits at the beginning? Directed by yeah. some jerk or whatever. They didn't yeah. do that for this movie. They actually had, you know, produced by Kevin yeah. Feige. I guess maybe probably let everybody know, hey, this is a Marvel movie, guys. It's really Marvel.
Yeah, we gave the thumbs up on this one. Yeah. It still felt like a Fox movie. You know what yeah. I mean? It did not feel like a MCU movie to yeah. me. To me.
That's fair. That's fair.
How do you feel about the Blade movie coming out?
What Blade movie coming out?
Are you serious?
You didn't know about that? They put it on hold. It's on hiatus. They took it off the slate. Oh, I reported on this months ago.
I did not see this.
Yeah, months ago I reported on it on this very show, Vegas World. You should all listen. If you're not listening, you should tell your friends to listen. I mean, if you are listening, obviously. Duh. Tell your friends to listen. You should listen too. That way you'd be informed. But yeah, you're right. there's no Blade movie on the slate for a while. So
I wanted to see what's his name, Mahershala Ali.
Yeah,
I feel like that would have been awesome.
I heard his voice in the Eternals. So, like, it's nice, it's, you know, it, cool. It fits Blade, but, yeah, I want to see what they do, and, like, they're still trying to work out a script. I don't think we're ever going to get that movie. I think we're going to have to...
I thought it was a lot more close to, like, being, like, put into production than it was.
It was supposed to, but COVID happened.
Okay.
So that was part of the timeline. Like, they were yep. going to start shooting, and then COVID happened, and, like, so they couldn't shoot in May.
Yep.
And then they decided to work on the script more. But then the writer's strike happened, so, like, they had to push that on yeah. pause.
Yep, yep.
And, like, you know, whatever reason, they can't get it right. So,
that sucks.
Do you think we'll see a Blade movie by 2027?
By 27? No.
No? You don't think?
By 27? No.
Do you think we'll even get Mahershala Ali as Blade? I mean, he's in his 50s, or about to be in his 50s. He's up there in age. He's not a young guy.
No, I didn't think he was, but man. Yeah, we might. Well, how old was Wesley Snipes whenever you did Blade?
I mean, he had to be in his mid to late 30s, at least.
Really? I thought he was older. I don't know. Maybe I'm tripping. I feel like, because when did Blade come out? I thought it came out like early 2000s.
Blade came out in 98.
Did it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes more sense to me then. Yeah. Yeah, so we might not even get Mahershala Ali, but I don't know who else I'd want playing him, honestly. Right. I feel like whenever I heard that, I was like, that's absolutely perfect. Like, yeah. I love that.
And he's an Oscar-winning actor, so, like, yeah. you'll know he'll...
Like, he has chops, for sure.
Yeah. I don't know if, like, it's a Marvel movie, so I don't know how far in-depth emotionally they'll go to, like, get that kind of performance, but I don't know he'll give it...
He would.
He'll give it a good try. I mean, not to say he won't do good work, because, like, I mean, Robert Downey Jr. and them are... They're all terrific actors, but, like... How much deeper are we willing to go? Like, especially
a Marvel movie.
Yeah, I mean, granted, Deadpool and Wolverine was rated R.
Yep.
So, like, maybe they'll give it that R rating. I'd hope, but you know,
I pray to God that Blade would get an R rating.
But, and that since you haven't been interested, so you're not interested in a Brave New World. Like, how do you?
Isn't Harrison Ford in it?
Yeah, he's Thunderbolt Ross. He replaced the actor because he died and they're best friends.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so that's why you took on the role.
That's cool. I might go see it. I like Harrison Ford a lot. It's one of my favorite actors of all time.
Do you think that Anthony Mackie could live up to being Captain America?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know how much it's really up to Anthony Mackie and how much it is to.
Because I feel like
Marvel making a good movie.
You know, grifters are going to be like, oh, you know, it's a black guy playing Captain America.
Steve Rogers. They have that in the source material, though.
True.
So I think it 100%. I think he has the ability for sure to go in and, like, you know, have that presence of, like, same way that Chris Evans did as Steve Rogers. But I think it ultimately, I don't know if Marvel... Just from what I've seen, I don't know if they have that ability to make, like, a... I don't know, make a movie like they, maybe it's me growing up.
You don't, all right, so wait, you don't think they can get back on track and, like, drop the hits that they did for,
I think it's too, like,
10
it's,
plus years.
Because at this point, it's the Marvel Industrial Complex. They push out so much material, and there's so much money involved. I think it's just the entirely different thing nowadays. Where, like,
that's the thing
you
about,
know what I mean?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. It's also funny, too, to hear from your perspective, because you've never grown up in a world without Marvel. Yeah. You didn't have to endure Batman and Robin or Batman Forever, where, like, they were comic book characters weren't taken as serious as a viable movie genre.
And now it's, like, probably fills up, like, half the spots in the top 10 grossing films of all time.
That's most box office. Yeah. Like, people go to the movies to see those. So, like, you don't get... So, like,
but I don't think that's there anymore is what I'm trying to say. I feel like it's too, I think.
You think Endgame was the end of it? Like, hey, we had our swan song. This is our bow.
Because Endgame was like, and honestly, that's the last time I remember you hearing all my friends be like, that's the movie you have to go see. Like, if you don't see that movie, like, you know, you're missing out big time. Like, that's the last movie I really, maybe the Spider-Man where they brought them all back. And honestly, the more, like, I rewatched that movie the other day, and maybe it's because, you know, it's been a minute, and I don't know, but it just feels so cheap to get, like, that, they're trying so hard to get that moment, to get a reaction, to, you know, get people to think Marvel's back, and not necessarily, like, a good Spider-Man story.
You felt it was more like, it's the moment itself, rather than the story.
The whole movie was made around the moment, rather than, let's go make a good Spider-Man movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like that's because Marvel was kind of starving at that point in time. They needed that. They needed that moment more than they needed Spider-Man, I guess.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and they got him under contract again to be able to use him in the Marvel universe. So we'll get a couple more movies with Tom Holland as a, I guess, matured Spider-Man.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think Marvel should, like, reboot, just start from scratch everything?
Oh man, I think they're too far gone at this point to even, like, go a different direction, like, choose some. I just don't know where they should go, and they have so much money involved with all the series and all the movies that they're pushing out. I mean, back in the day, whenever I really cared about Marvel movies, I think we cared about them because there wasn't a ton coming out. I mean, and then now if you look at, like, the lineup,
it was like two or three a year, and now it's
max,
like four
max. You'd be
four
lucky
plus TV shows.
Exactly. Like, so to keep up with it back then, you'd go see a couple movies a year and you're caught up all on the story. Now you gotta watch three seasons of TV and go see four movies in theaters, and it's so much time that nobody is willing to go, like, unless you're a diehard Marvel fan. And I don't know if diehard Marvel fans are really enjoying the direction they're even taking it. I don't know.
How do you feel about Robert Downey Jr. being Dr. Doom?
I think this is going back to what I was saying about Spider-Man. I think this is them hunting for a moment because they're starving.
This is the in case emergency break glass, bring back Downey.
Yeah.
This is my theory. I've been running it since I heard Robert Downey Jr. was Doom.
Yep.
I think he's going to be an MCU style Doom bot. I really do think that. I think he's gonna be a variant. It's gonna be an.
It's for sure gonna be a variant because they're not gonna just gloss over, like, you look like Tony Stark. Like, they're not gonna just like.
I feel like that's gonna be an MCU version of a Doom bot, and the real Doom is gonna come out eventually.
Okay.
And take over.
So
that's my theory. That's my wishful thinking.
Yeah, yeah. I would hope it would be that, but if that's your wishful thinking, who do you think they're going to put as Doom? Who would you want, at least?
Mikkels Madsen is a popular choice.
I want to see Cillian Murphy.
Really?
Yes.
You think Cillian Murphy would play a...
I don't know if he would do it. No, I don't know if he would actually do it.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like the big blockbuster movie guy.
Yeah, I mean, he did... he's done Nolan movies, but I think
that's a Nolan movie. Let's
gonna,
be real.
I was gonna say, well, because I was trying to think. I was like, well, he has done Black, and I started thinking. I was like, wait, shit, they're all Nolan movies.
It's Nolan. It's
that isn't like a normal.
It's a step above the comic book. It's a comic movie, but like,
it's Nolan.
It's Nolan.
Yeah. No, I don't. I think that's another tough thing with the MCU. I don't know how many actors are really willing, good actors are really willing to go, unless they're just trying to get a check.
To be realistic, they're going for the paycheck, yeah.
100%.
Like, that's another thing. I feel like a lot of people say Chris Evans wasn't planning on coming back because they're teasing him the possibly of like re-signing and coming back again as like old man Rogers or something like that, but like are being part of it in some way. But I feel like he thought, okay, I'm going to cash in as this in this franchise, yep. Then I'm gonna go off and do like my you know vanity project type of low indie budget films.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of like, oh crap, there's not an audience for that stuff anymore.
Yeah, for sure.
Because that's another thing too. Like Anthony Mackie brought this up, that like no one's going to see the Anthony Mackie movie. They're going to see the Hawkeye movie, because like, it's the character is the star now and not the actor itself.
Yep.
So
I think, I don't know, and I can't say that I really blame Marvel for going the direction that they've been going in, because I mean, whenever you have that much, you're making that much money for movies, I mean, who wouldn't, you know, try and produce the most? But I don't think that is really conducive to making a good product. You know what I mean?
Making art with a little bit of substance. Like, again, it's comic movies. And while they're taking seriously now, like, they're still kind of surface level.
Or it's like, what did Scorsese say a few years back? Like, he says, you know, theme parks.
They're theme park movies.
I say, you know, it's funny. Whenever I heard that quote, I mean, I'm trying to think how old I would have been. I don't know. I wasn't that into movies then. At that time, I hadn't seen a Scorsese movie. And I was like, you know, like, oh, he needs to shut up. Like, you know, Marvel. And now I'm looking at it, I was like, shit.
I mean, as a Scorsese fan, it is kind of funny because he does kind of make the same picture over and over again.
Oh, for sure. No, I'm not.
The guy with big ego has a lot of success, then falls tragically. Like, he's made the same movie over and over. I mean, I love him, don't get me wrong. But yeah, I don't know. Do you think at this point now, do you think DC could overtake Marvel? Do you think
I think they have a very big possibility.
Especially with James Gunn at the helm. Yep, he's the Kevin Feige.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I think they for sure have the potential. And like, I'm just very curious to see. I mean, Superman, I think, will tell us all we need to know.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Because like, you can think about it, 10 years from now, DC could be on top and Marvel could be in the DC role of trying to play catch up.
Yeah.
That sounds wild to me, because like, you know, 5 years ago I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah,
I would have been like, nah, Marvel's too big now. But I think the other big issue is the fact that they planned all the way to Endgame, right? That was the big thing, and now they're like,
they're just
where do we go from here?
It
also doesn't help.
And then they were planning to do
Kang Dynasty. They were gonna do that, but next thing. Circumstances prevented that. We're not gonna get into that.
No.
So they had to pivot, and I guess that's another thing too. Yeah, that's one another reason they had to, like, you know, hit the emergency glass button and bring back Downey. We'll see. But sure. On that note, I don't know, is there anything else in pop culture that's caught your attention that you'd like to speak on real quick, because we've gone over an hour?
Yeah, no, I don't think there's anything.
All right, so we covered Nosferatu. Good movie, you should guys go see it. So you can find me at the JC Vega on Instagram and all the social medias. You can find Vegas World Pod on Instagram. You like, subscribe, you know, I mean, I guess you can subscribe technically on podcasts, but yeah, give us a thumbs up. Give us 5 stars. Help the algorithm. Tell your friends. Thank you all for tuning in. You know, I don't do some other co-hosts, but since you're here, party on, Chase.
Party on.